This is Awareness Explorers.
Welcome back, fellow explorers, to Awareness Explorers. I'm your co-host, Jonathan Robinson, and I'm with my friend and co-host,
Brian Tom O'Connor.
And I'm excited about today's broadcast because we're going to be doing something slightly different. We were talking before the show about how you and I have various ways we like to quiet our mind. And quieting one's mind is pretty key to knowing yourself as awareness and a lot of other good things, such as inner peace, you know, for anybody who's into inner peace. Are you into inner peace?
It's overrated.
It really is. But what the hell? Let's do a podcast about it anyways.
Yeah.
So in trying to quiet one's mind, there are approaches that historically have been passed down from thousands of years. And I find that a lot of those methods don't work very well for me. They're just like my 30-year-old computer doesn't work very well for me. So I got a new one. And some of these methods that we're going to be talking about are your favorite methods. And then we're going to do another podcast on my favorite methods for quieting one's mind. And I thought maybe we'd, kind of do an interview format where I'm asking you about your favorite methods and you're talking about them. And then we're going into detail about how they work, why they work, and eventually get them to work.
Sounds good.
So a lot of these methods, I think you're going to be talking about five different ones. Can you say a little bit about what that process was like discovering them?
Sure. Actually, I have more than five, but I've broken them down into three basic buckets, which we'll get into. But about quieting the mind. First of all, I just want to say what we're talking about, or at least what I mean when I talk about quieting the mind. I'm talking about thoughts. And what specifically I mean by thoughts is words in your head. Mm-hmm. I mean, you might say that, okay, maybe a visual image of a tree or something like that is a thought, and that's fine. But for the sake of today, I'm defining it as the words in your mind, the words that run through your mind, verbal thought, because those are the ones that I feel veil our true nature.
And they do a damn good job of it with incessant thinking, like all the time, and comments on practically everything. So I look forward to talking about this more because I have incessant thoughts and I have methods that work for me. I'm looking forward to hearing about yours. But you mentioned these three buckets that the methods fall into. I'm wondering if you can tell me more about that.
Oh, okay, sure. The three basic buckets are ignoring thought, which is the simplest way, and that works for some people and not for others.
Yeah, I find that when I ignore my thought, it starts screaming at me.
Yeah, exactly. But every once in a while, I've sat down and had been able to just say, oh, just ignore the thoughts. And I was able to. On other days, I wasn't. So I like to have a whole suite of things to try. When one doesn't work, you can pull another one out of the bag of tricks. The second bucket is turning attention away from thought, turning attention to what is not thought. And that includes basic awareness, but it also includes nonverbal things like body sensations and sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And the third bucket is actually looking at thought directly and delving into its nature. Because when you really see what thought is, your relationship to it changes and it becomes just simply a useful tool to have when you need it, but not an incessant presence that becomes an identity.
It's interesting, as you say those three buckets, I can tell right away which one I tend to do the most and which one works the best for me. And I'm wondering if that's true for other people, that they have learned or are suspicious as to, I think the first or the second or the third bucket is the one that works for me. And I wonder if it's often the same for people, or if it's evenly distributed amongst the three buckets. But say more about each of them, or an example of each that might be useful.
Okay. Well, first of all, I just wanted to say that there's a couple of caveats, or maybe you could call them paradoxes, around this. And one is that often we feel that we must get rid of thoughts through effort. Mm-hmm. And that practically never works. I mean, if we feel that we have to not think, or we have to get rid of thought, and we have to empty our mind, and whatever tactic we're using to do it feels effortful, it's probably not going to work for you. There was a quote from Adyashanti, which was one of my favorites, was, when you go into battle with your mind, you'll be at war forever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think that turning attention away is a good practice. And the other caveat I would say before I go into the first bucket is that it's helpful to quiet the mind, because the mind and its incessant thoughts about past and future veil what I believe is our default state of happiness. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's really useful to know that that clear field of pure awareness is always and already there, even when thoughts are running through your mind. So it doesn't have to be this thing that I either succeed or I fail. You can try and quiet the mind, and then it makes that pure background of love and joy come into the foreground. But another way of approaching it is just to notice that even when your mind is busy, that pure background is still there. And so that you could maybe call that a fourth bucket, or just a way of like taking a little pressure off so that you don't have an achievement mentality about it.
Mm-hmm. I like that fourth bucket, because really in that fourth bucket, you're focusing on at least trying to be aware of awareness. And as you become aware of awareness, whether there's thoughts or not doesn't really make much difference.
That's right. And you don't get this sense of, oh, I failed because I haven't quieted my mind, when you succeeded at noticing that that choiceless awareness, which is already okay with everything that appears in it, is always there, even when your mind is busy.
Mm-hmm.
Just waiting for you to turn your attention to it.
So that being said, what are some examples of these different buckets?
Well, for instance, in the first bucket, ignoring thought, there's just actually basic, just ignoring thought. Just choose to simply ignore them. But some people can do that and some people can't. And as I mentioned before, I can do it sometimes and other times I can't. And so sometimes it's useful to have a metaphor around it. For example, imagine that those thoughts in your mind are like the scrolling text that goes across the bottom of a news screen on TV. And you can just say, okay, I'm just going to look at those faces. I'm not going to look at that scrolling text. I'm just going to ignore it.
Yeah, I have a friend that says that he thinks of his thoughts as like a radio playing in the distance that he is not interested in.
Yeah, you're right. That's a good way of putting it. A radio playing in the distance. Yeah, exactly. You can ignore it, or you can change the channel, but that's more in the second bucket. But I like that. Another way to do it is a method I call slippery mind, which is imagining that your mind is just made of a surface that's so slippery that when a thought comes in, it just can't find any purchase and it just slips out the other side. I sometimes think of a rotating disc, like in a funhouse. When I was a kid, there was a funhouse in Rye Playland, and we used to sit on this rotating disc, and the faster it would spin, we'd all just slide off the disc. We'd try to stay on, but we never succeeded.
Well, I think visual images like that can be very helpful. I was just trying to, as you talked about, and I said, you know, imagine each thought is just slipping right off my brain in that way. And I could really feel that immediately, like, wow, that really could work. I don't need to focus on that thing that was bothering me or whatever it was.
Yeah, exactly. And you can, I use the image of that funhouse disc, but everyone can customize it to what works for you. Oh, and by the way, I'm going to be going through all of these in the guided meditation later, so you don't need to take notes now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What's another one?
Well, those are the three main things in the ignoring thoughts, the just the simple ignoring thoughts, the news text, and the slippery mind.
Uh-huh. And, you know, I think as you try these things in the guided meditation or even right now, you start to really immediately get a sense which ones kind of resonate with you and which ones don't. And when we had this discussion before the podcast, we realized that each of us had come up with kind of our own take on quieting our mind, and that our methods were different. We had no methods that were the same. And I found that pretty interesting because we both explored this a fair amount. And we eventually came upon trial and error, what worked for each of us. And they're very precise. And eventually you just kind of find, oh, that one is my easy go-to whenever I need something.
Yeah. But every once in a while, I'll hear one of yours and say, oh, gee, I'm surprised I hadn't thought about that. I'm going to try that one out. And it works pretty well.
Yeah, that's true too. So what's another one?
Well, the second bucket is turning your attention to what is not thought. So what isn't thought? And there's several things that isn't thought, particularly verbal thought. One is simply body sensations. In other words, you don't need verbal thoughts running in your head to describe a body sensation in order to feel it directly. It's right now. It's right here. You can notice it. You don't have to describe it. Same with sounds. Sounds are really, really good things to focus on that you don't need words running through your mind to experience it. These are things that are not thought, just pure sensations in your body, sounds, or just breathing. This is the classic age-old one. Just turn your attention to your breath, to the feeling of the breath coming in and out through your nose, to the rise and fall of your belly as you breathe. You don't need words to experience this directly. So you turn your attention away from thought to these things. Another thing that you can turn your attention towards that is not thought is that which never leaves or changes. In other words, what is already here before the thoughts arrive? What's never changed ever since you were a little kid? What is that I that you call yourself that notices your experience? So thoughts appear in this field, and on this show, of course, we call it awareness, since we're awareness explorers, but other people have other terms for it, the ground of being, pure background. I like pure background. You know, one of my techniques is simply be the background. And then you identify with that. It's like writing on a whiteboard. You turn your attention from the writing to the white, and then you identify with that.
Yeah. You know, I like this bucket. A lot of my methods, favorite methods, fall into this category. But what I find interesting is that the things that I'm focused on, the not thought things I'm focused on, are different than your not thought things that you focus on. So even there, even in the same general bucket, the variety of things possible to focus on are very unique to each individual as to what works for them.
Yeah, I'd be curious to hear what some of yours are. You can either tell me about them now, or if you want to save them for part two of this episode.
Well, stay tuned to part two, and that way it will be a little teaser to get people to listen to that one as well next time.
Great. And then one other thing in this bucket is just the concept of wordlessness, which you've already really touched upon in many ways. But if you just do the wordlessness practice directly, and it basically involves asking yourself, what can I notice about my present experience without using words to describe it? Mm-hmm. And it's just another facet, it's just another way of doing all that we've done before, because the answer is usually body sensations, sounds, breathing. Now, what's right now? And when you just simply ask yourself the question, there's plenty in right now, right here, this experience that I can experience directly without using words to describe them. And so it's turning your attention to that.
I like that one. That one has worked for me. And it's so simple, and it has that fine line where you're kind of not making an effort, but there is a slight change of focus in some way. So making an effort tends not to work, but not making any effort also tends not to work. So it's a very fine line of you're doing something where you're kind of recognizing how things actually are before you screw them up with all your thoughts.
That's a good way of putting it. And you're right. There's a middle ground between effort and zero effort. Mm-hmm. No effort. I mean, because you could, you know, no effort is like, I'm going to sit on the couch with a beer and watch TV. That doesn't require much effort at all, but that's not going to help reveal your true nature. So I usually think of it as the least amount of effort possible to turn your attention to pure awareness and mm-hmm. be that, be the mm-hmm. background.
So what's our third bucket?
The third bucket is the opposite, which unintuitively works well also. And it's looking at thought directly and delving into its nature. And the ways you can do this are by asking very pointed questions like, you've got words running through your head, right? You can hear them, or sometimes you see them, or however the individual experiences them. But you ask, well, who are the words in my head talking to? Another question to ask is, did I create these thoughts? And actually, most of the time, we don't decide to think anything. Thoughts just appear. And when we know that, then it's more easy to separate from thoughts. Another question is, where do thoughts come from? So you're turning attention to thoughts by looking at them, and by the very fact that you are looking at them, you create a separation. You're less identified with thoughts.
You also have a question about how thoughts are really trying to answer problems. Can you go more into that one?
Yeah, and this is actually my favorite one, or at least recently. I've gotten a lot of traction with this one, and this is the last one in this bucket, which is simply seeing that all thoughts involve problems. And perhaps without exception, I suppose some people can find an exception, but I hardly ever do. If you look at each thought as it arises and you ask, what problem is this thought trying to solve? And it can be something very simple, like, what am I going to say next? Or what am I going to do about some payment that I need to pay, or some disagreement I'm having with someone? How do I convince somebody of something? Or whatever, practically all thoughts involve problems. And when you really see that that's the nature of thought, and you ask the question, which is one of my favorite glimpse practices from Locke Kelly, which is, what is here now if there are no problems to be solved? I'm sure that's a paraphrase, but that's basically it. And when you see that and you say, well, can I just for now let go of trying to fix or solve anything? Then a certain, at least for me, a certain relief, a certain lightness, a certain laughter comes over. Like, oh, you mean all that incessant thinking was just trying to solve a problem? And they're useful. Thoughts that solve problems are needed when you have to get to the airport on time, or when you have to make up a grocery list or balance your checkbook. But that's when they become demoted to servant status, because as the famous quote goes, the mind is an excellent servant, but a poor master.
Mm-hmm. It seems like in this bucket, you're using different types of questions to look at thought and maybe put them into the larger realm of awareness, or the context of the larger field of awareness.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And you you see that thoughts are simply another appearance in awareness, along with sounds, sensations, sights. These are just appearances in awareness. And you are that pure awareness in which sounds, sights, sensations, and thoughts appear.
Mm-hmm.
So really, the shift in identity is key, and has always been in this kind of practice.
You know, one of the questions you ask is, what is here now if there's no problem to be solved? And can you let go of any problem to be solved right now? That became very close to kind of the Sedona method questions, which is, can you identify which category of thought you're in, such as control or approval or security? And then can you let go of wanting that category right now? So would you say that that fits into that bucket as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really good example of it, because you're looking at the nature of thought.
Mm-hmm.
And you're asking, can I let go of what is being demanded of me by this thought at this moment, just for now?
Mm-hmm. I like those types of questions because the questions are focusing on something that's happening now that is kind of obscuring awareness, and then asking you, can you either see the bigger field or can you let go of the obscuring thing? Like, for example, can you welcome the knower, like the know-it-all, maybe? And then could you let go of the know-it-all? Mm-hmm. Or could you welcome the desire? Before the podcast, I was feeling maybe a little bit of disapproval from a friend of mine. And I was kind of battling that in my head, you know, well, they shouldn't have disapproved me or whatever it was. And then, you know, so I asked myself, could I feel my desire for approval? And then could I let go of my desire for needing approval just for right now? And all those types of questions, which really I like the formula, ask yourself the question about what you're currently experiencing that could be called an impediment to pure awareness. And then ask yourself if you can either let go of it or see the larger field that it appears in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are really great examples, I think.
Yeah.
And it's interesting when you describe what happens when something like that happens. You get a feeling of disapproval from someone, or anything where you think something shouldn't have happened. What the natural thing that happens is your mind starts running through the scenarios with the shoulds and the shouldn'ts. And aren't these internal dialogues in your mind? Aren't they words mm-hmm. running mm-hmm. through your head?
Yeah. You know, I do a lot of couples therapy, and in couples, they're always looking for who's to blame for the problem.
Yeah.
And it never goes anywhere. You know, no one ever says, oh, now I see why everything I've been doing is wrong. Thank you for showing me the errors of my ways. Now I'll stop that. That's never been uttered on earth. And in a certain way, we're doing the same thing inside our minds, where we're trying to blame a person or reality or the situation so that we can feel kind of on top of it. And it doesn't really do anything other than make us upset, and it doesn't accomplish anything usually of any value.
That's right. It absolutely doesn't. And it reminds me also of a very key component of all this is emotion. You know, when emotion comes, it's actually, and we often don't think of it, the first thing we do is run through the stories or the words or the shoulds and shouldn'ts in our mind. But what we forget is that emotions are chemicals coursing through our bodies. And when we turn our attention, and this would be in the second bucket, turn our attention away from the thought and the stories to where in my body am I feeling this emotion? These sensations, that that changes your relation to emotion right away. And it takes the, it takes the should or the shouldn't, and it take, you know, because it lessens the possibility that you're going to need a strategy to not have the emotion. When you get used to turning your attention from the story to the physical experience of it, then you can start dropping the strategy to prevent having the emotion. And it's those strategies that prevent emotion which lead to depression.
This morning, I was getting caught up in a political fight inside my own head, thinking that a politician I know was not doing what I wanted that politician to be doing, as I often fight with him in my head. And I know it's actually creating massive change in the world when I do this, Brian. I think single-handedly, me having this dialogue in my head about this particular politician could perhaps change world history. At least that's what my head thinks. And as I became aware of this ridiculous argument in my head, it made me realize to use one of your third bucket things, which is examining it. I said, First of all, I said, is this argument doing me any good? And then is it happening right now? And that also kind of brought me back to the reality, which happened in this case to be me walking through the woods.
Right.
But we have to recognize that there's obstacles inside ourselves that are always whisking us away from these three or four buckets. And I think another necessary ingredient in quieting your mind is being aware of your particular main ways of avoiding these buckets and being whisked away into unproductive thinking patterns.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Knowing your own patterns is really key. And you can ask yourself questions about it, like, you've got this thing running through your head about something that shouldn't be happening in the world. And you can ask yourself, what am I willing to do about it right now?
Ooh, that's confronting.
And if the answer is nothing right now, then say, okay, then for now, forget about it.
Yeah, I think with some of these very intense thought loops that I and other people fall into, that having a predetermined strategy to get out of them can be a good idea. Like every time I think about that situation, I'm going to use the slippery mind technique, or I'm going to use the focus on body sensations technique. Because these thought patterns, besides them not doing anything, they do make us upset and they do keep us from the love and peace that's our birthright. So having a strategy for knowing what they are and then recognizing specific things you can do when they show up can be a really helpful thing.
Yeah, and the strange sort of paradox of it all is when you really get good at that, at turning your attention from the thought to simply direct experience of what is, you become calmer, you become clearer, and then it starts to affect your life and the way you live your life. And when you are called upon to take action, things become smoother and easier then.
Mm-hmm. I think for me, a first step was really realizing that I am an addict of certain thought loops. Just like somebody might be an alcoholic or a drug addict, that certain thought loops I like, and I like to revisit them, and I like to go over them, and I like the feelings of self-righteousness that come from them. And there should be a 12-step meeting called Thinking Anonymous. Realizing first I am powerless. I need help. I need a method. I need God. I need something in order to overcome some of these loops. And some of these methods are definitely powerful strategies along that way.
Yeah, it's a really good thing to know about yourself. And this addiction to thought is Well, it's kind of the human condition. I mean, most of us are. But when you can get away from that, when you can see that in yourself and you can get away from it, it's amazingly freeing. And one of the analogies that I use is that it's like a river. Thought is like a river that's constantly streaming through you. And all the rivers of thought are emptying into one ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually a one-way stream. Thought, thought, mm-hmm. thought. So you never get the ocean water in you because it's a one-way stream. And when you quiet that a little bit, then that kind of fresh, salty ocean water can start to come back into the estuary and you can experience that ocean of joy when the one-way stream of thoughts into awareness calms down and then the joy of awareness starts to filter back into your experience.
And with the infusion of awareness, there's like creative energy and juice and clarity and peace. And when the thought river is quieted and the energy of the water can go both ways, then you start to be filled up from within.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. Beautiful.
So we need to get these methods out. Those are all great methods, Brian. And really, it just takes, you know, choosing one for a day, trying it, seeing if it resonates with you. And then if that one doesn't work so well, trying another one until you see that you have a different relationship with your thought. Because right now, most people's relationship with their thoughts is that they are their thoughts. And which is kind of funny because we don't have control of our thoughts. So we're saying that we are something that we have no control over.
That's right. Exactly. And seeing when we have control and when we do not have control can be really enlightening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that reminds me, I'm going to mention this in the guided meditation, but about the techniques that work for you and that don't work for you, you don't only have to have one.
Mm.
And I actually find that I have a bunch of them that I've tried and I know work at least sometime. And let's say I sit down for a meditation session and the mind is quite active. I have a bunch of techniques that I can call upon and I can try. And I can just sort of improvise. It's like a jazz instrumentalist who knows a whole bunch of chord changes, who knows a whole bunch of scales, and he's got them under his skin so he can just improvise. So that's what I do when I sit down. I just have a lot of methods, and I just sit down and play jazz with them.
That sounds beautiful. Well, I look forward to hearing your jazz improvisation in your guided meditation.
Oh, great. Thanks. Okay, so let's dive right in. So first, as always, take a nice, easy, deep breath and scan your body to see if there's any clutching or holding. And if there is, simply breathe into it and let it dissolve with the breath. When you are clearly sensing your identity as the wordless background in which thoughts appear, then thoughts are not a problem. You just let them come and let them go, knowing that the real you is unaffected by them. But if that's not what's happening for you now, there are three approaches to thought that might help. One approach involves simply ignoring thought. Another involves turning your attention away from thoughts. And the third involves looking at thought directly and delving into its nature. All of these approaches can work, so let's try them and see which works for you. The first approach, ignoring thought, sometimes is enough for some people. It involves simply ignoring the words that come into your mind. Simple as that. A thought comes, ignore it. Or you can ignore thoughts in the same way you might ignore the scrolling text at the bottom of the screen in a TV news show. But for some folks, thought is too insistent, and so you need a little extra something, a little extra inattention. One way is to imagine that your mind is very slippery. Thoughts come in and they can't find any purchase to stick around. They just slide on out the other side. An image I use for this is that of an old-fashioned amusement park funhouse disc. When I was a kid, there used to be one at Rye Playland, and all of us kids would sit on the disc and it would start spinning gradually, getting faster and faster. Try as we might to stay on the disc, the centrifugal force combined with the smoothness of the surface would cause us to slide right off. You can play with your mind that way too. Just imagine it is so slippery and perhaps even spinning that when thoughts come, they just slide right out the other side. The second approach is to turn your attention away from thought to what is other than thought. A good example is your body sensations. You don't need thought to notice your body sensations. You can feel them without describing them in words. Just notice them without describing them. The same with the breath. You don't need thought to notice your breath. You can feel yourself breathing without describing it in words. Just notice your breathing without describing. What else is not thought? That which is continuous. That which never leaves or changes. That which was there before thought arose. That in which thought appears. Notice that. Be that. Identify with that. What else is not thought? That in which thoughts appear. In other words, awareness. In other words, you. You, the pure, choiceless presence of pure awareness itself. The background of all experience, in which all experience appears. Be the background. Identify with that. Another second approach method you can try is wordlessness. Simply ask yourself, what can I notice about my current experience without using words to describe it? With some practice, you can learn to even ask this question wordlessly as you notice your direct experience. The third approach involves looking at thought directly and delving into its nature. One way to do this is to ask one of these three questions. Who are the words in my head talking to? Do I create thoughts? Where do thoughts come from? Asking these questions can reveal that thoughts appear to you. You are not thoughts. You are bigger. You include thoughts and everything else, and thoughts are just simply one of many appearances in you, awareness. And the final method in this third bucket is seeing that all thoughts involve problems. The fact that thoughts themselves appear is not a problem, but it's really useful to know that every thought involves some sort of a problem, no matter how small. This is the nature of the mind. Every thought, without exception, is targeting some problem that needs to be solved. This is what it does. Useful when needed for practical matters. Utterly useless if you want to discover your true nature as boundless joy. So here's the game. Relax and don't try to change anything in your experience, just for now. Wait for a thought to appear. Ask yourself, what problem is this thought trying to solve? When you identify the problem, think to yourself, aha, and take a breath. Wait for the next thought. Repeat. Here's some examples. How do I do this? What should I make for dinner? How can I get rid of this pain? What should I say next? These are all thoughts. These all involve problems. And just for now, ask yourself, can I let go of having to do anything about it to fix anything in my current experience, just for now? Try this on your own for a few minutes. If you prefer, you can try one of the other methods. And as you get better and better at each of these methods, you can flow freely from one to the other and simply play jazz. Now, take another easy deep breath and at your own pace, begin to open your eyes.
Well, that had a full menu to choose from, and people are going to like at least one of those things on that menu.
Yeah.
If not all of them, and if you eat all of them or digest all of them, you'll be very full of your true nature.
Yes, that is my dearest wish for all of your listeners.
Uh-huh. Great. Any final words about your recipe for going beyond thought?
Don't make a competition out of it, or don't make it some incredibly difficult thing that you need to really work hard at. It's all so much easier than you think it is.
Yeah, it's a not so much an effort, but a very effortful non-effort.
Yes, that it's letting go. It's like, you know, how do I let go? It's like, let's say you're holding on to a pencil. How do I let go of this? Open your fingers.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, may our listeners have open minds, open fingers, and open hearts.
Oh, I couldn't have wished for better.
Until next time, keep exploring.
Keep exploring.
Thank you for listening to Awareness Explorers. To learn more, you can check out our website at awarenessexplorers.com. Please subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcast app We'd love it if you would post a review. And please share our link on Facebook and with family and friends, because knowing yourself as awareness is the greatest gift you can give yourself or someone you love.